Welcome to Oilfield Talk. My name is Trey Fought, and I'm host of Oilfield Talk podcast. We want to speak with workers from all other aspects of the oil and gas industry and allow them the outlet to tell some crazy, amazing stories you just wouldn't believe are true. Not just the wildcats, the drillers, the roughnecks, the roustabouts, but the land-based offshore drilling operations, service companies, vendors, third-party personnel, production, transportation, all aspects of the industry that provide expertise throughout the oil field industry. But each of these have many, many hilarious stories to share about their time in the oil patch. I have no doubt that we will be able to share entertaining stories or tell tall tales that anyone who works in the industry will appreciate and get a hearty laugh while listening. But this is also going to be a family podcast. We'll be able to invite our families at home to listen. Although they won't believe half the stories we share, they may have a couple of dozen questions. Maybe it will give them and everyone a greater appreciation of the jobs we have in the oil field and why we enjoy our oil field family for half a year. So please take an hour or so out of your day. Give a listen to the Oilfield Talk podcast. Hope you enjoy the stories as much as I enjoy bringing them to you. Good morning. I've got a treat for you. I spent last weekend at Humble, Texas, attending the Good Oil Days Festival. What a great event. Small town feel. The place was just electric with activity. Was able to get several good interviews. Appreciate everybody that took their time, especially Mike and Nydia from Oil Patch Gear. Great to finally meet you in person. Keep up the good work. Aaron Nielsen from Embers Bakery Kingwood. Tapville Social, Central Texas Mobile Tap Room, Howard and Sharon Meetag, Miss Margie, and Mr. Robert Moe. Mr. Moe is the director of the Humble Museum, wrote several books about the area, and took the time to sit down with Oilfield Talk to discuss some of the Humble history. Special shout out to Mr. Bob Robertson with Radio K-Air, www.radiokair.com, local Humble radio station. Didn't get the interview yet, but that's coming. He also wants to play some of the podcast on his radio station, so that'll be something new for Oilfield Talk. So everybody sit back, relax, enjoy the Good Oil Days Oil Boom Festival, and learn a little Humble history. Welcome to Oilfield Talk. I'm with Oil Patch Gear. You want to introduce yourselves?
Mike Alanese, Oil Patch Gear.
Nydia Alanese.
Oil Patch Gear.
All right. They're the owners of Oil Patch Gear. Some of you may have seen some of their stuff out on the rigs. They've been doing a lot of, as a matter of fact, I ran into them just that offshore. I was like, who's got that? I looked them up online and shot them an email and introduced myself across the internet. And this is the first time we've actually met. So we're at Humble, Texas for the, let me see if I get this right.
Good Oil Days.
I love that name. Good Oil Days Festival. And if anybody knows Texas history, Humble was one huge oil field for Texas. They've got a really, I'm going to put some pictures up, but Main Street Humble is shut down and they've got all the little tents out, people selling things and oil patch gears here. So tell me a little of your history.
Hi, yes, Mike Alanese, oil patch worker for the last 26 years. And I've come up with an idea to cater to some of the guys, the girls and guys out in the oil patch to wear a certain look that we follow. And it's an apparel company. Oil Patch Gear is an apparel company made for the oil group, land rigs offshore, you name it, refineries. We have something for everybody. And we established about 2018. We've been on social media. We have a pretty good following, Facebook, and so on and so forth. We have our website, oldpatchgeartx.com.
TX? For like Texas.
Like Texas.com. And we're at the Humble Good Oil Days Festival. So come by and reach out. Just make friends. Oil Patch Gear is here for you.
That's right. And you can look them up online. You can order online. Let's cross-pollinate. You know, your guys can listen to my podcast and then Oil Patch Gear. I'm going to pump the logos.
That's right. That's right. Oil Patch Gear has reached out all the way across the United States. And actually, it's been in Africa, South Cape Town, places I've traveled. Actually, as well, Brazil, Amsterdam. I have some followers out there and some gear. the Philippines. So it's been moving around quite a bit, and Oil Patch Gear is has been recognized as one of the top cap sellers on the road.
There you
oil
go.
Industry here.
Yeah, it's a very unique look. Yeah, and it looks good. It really does. I've always liked the logo. I remember the first time I saw it and it caught my eye. Unfortunately, I'm not a hat man. And I saw a hat the first time. I was like, man, I like that logo, but not going to get a hat. Anyway,
so I think the what I would like to say as well, the name Oil Patch is significant with the old school oil and gas drillers. It goes back from when Hydro, which is one of the companies that I work for, 1933, started building BOPs. So Oil Patch Gear lives with our grandfathers who started this kind of business. And that's where the word itself, oil patch. The patch was a big industry. And, it was just a thought of idea for drilling land rigs and then moved to offshore production. But I think the name kind of sticks from the oil field to the oil patch. It kind of renowns itself as an old school classic look and logo for the OPG followers. We're real proud of it. We're real proud of the name itself. Our forefathers or grandfathers, like I said, are the ones that started this. So I'm just trying to keep the name going in the oil patch.
I agree. And I used oil field, and it's like either one works. Oil people understand what the oil patch is and the oil field. They're the same thing, but it's just two different ways of expressing where we work is in the oil patch. And yes, love the logo. Y'all are doing great. This is their first festival to do live and in person where people can see the product, buy the product. They're going to start going to some other festivals. I'm sure if you follow them on Facebook, follow them on their website, they'll announce that ahead of time. So anybody listening out there, y'all start following Oil Patch Gear.
Give us a like.
That's it. Give a like, give a share, buy some products. Got some really cool gear.
Just want to tell you, thank you so much for inviting us into your podcast. Sound great. We follow you and want to continue following with you and all the great stuff. We got stickers here for you.
Absolutely.
Well.
And you're the owner. Yes, you're the owner of Oil Patch Gear. There you go.
Yes.
A lot of my personal friends know her. Not as Miss Alanis, but Nidia.
Ah.
Ask Nidia. All the guys are like, ask Nidia.
I like it.
She's got ask the Nidia. Answer, right?
Yes, she has the answer.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Good morning. Welcome to Oil Field Talk. And you are?
I'm Aaron Nielsen
with
Ember's Bakery Kingwood.
Tell me about your stuff.
Absolutely. So we have traditional biscuits. We have three flavors, a peanut butter pumpkin. We also have an apple, carrot, and oat. And we have a gluten-free blueberry carrot coconut oil. More of a traditional treat. People are a little more comfortable with those. But we also have our single ingredient items, which are extremely healthy for the dogs. Gives them a lot of great health benefits. We have organ meat and dehydrated chicken gizzards, duck gizzards. We have chicken hearts, which are an excellent way to train your dog to get out there to go potty.
I love chicken hearts.
There we go. And we also have chicken feet and duck feet and cow trachea that helps with your dog's hips, joints, and bones. They have glucosamine, chondroitin, collagen, all that good stuff for them. We have pig ears, which are a nice treat for them. We even have dehydrated and freeze-dried duck heads. We have bully sticks, yak cheese, and we also have some gullet from the cow. A lot of good stuff.
Wow.
Dogs just love it. You'll notice a difference. I'll say that much.
Well, that's fantastic. How long have you been doing this?
So we started in November 2020 during the pandemic.
Something to do.
Yeah, something to do.
Have you always been interested in this kind of stuff? Or?
So we did it with our dogs beforehand. And then as you know, in the oil business, I'm an oil and gas attorney. Prices went negative for a while in April of 2020. Work just slowed down generally and just wanted to do something. I'm a busy person, so got out and started doing dog treats. Wonder if our neighbors were interested. They were. So we started going to farmers markets and it just blew up.
And there you go. And that's the way these things do. You have some unique items. Dried chicken feet and pig ears, as we talked about, some duck heads. It's really kind of stopped me in my tracks. I was like, hang on a minute, what am I looking at? Heck yeah, I want you on the podcast. Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, I'll stick this on the podcast. It's like I was telling them down there. We just cross-pollinate for everybody. You know, do some advertising. You're online, so I'm sure you ship stuff.
We do. EmbersBakeryKingwood.com.
Thank you very much. Have a good one.
You too.
All of the volunteers
because there's so many that play a big role. We couldn't do it without our volunteers, especially our sponsors. Be sure to thank our sponsors right here, the centerpiece of our Good Old Days Festival here in Main Street, the Big Paul Derrick, Mid-Tag Manor, Howard and Sharon Mid-Tag. Thank you for what you do. Thank you for all the ways you contribute. So let's have a great time today. Enjoy the fellowship. Enjoy our historic Main Street. And enjoy the vendors. Treat our vendors right. And check out our working Pump Jack right over here. And also Uncle PD and those fantastic drones right down the street. They're amazing. Well, thank you all. Have a great time. One more thing I want to mention. I'd be remiss if I didn't call special attention to our fantastic mural here in Uptown Park. The mural artist, Jesse DeLeon, did a fantastic job. I provided all the essential elements from our history that you can see, and he turned it into a fantastic mural that we're going to be proud of. So thank you, Jesse, for your fantastic work. Be sure and all of you check it out. Thank you.
Well, Texas, we appreciate it. Make sure to join us on Facebook, like us on Twitter. Hey, it's your opportunity to win some cash on this beautiful, beautiful day. It's $5 a ticket right here in the raffle starting now. They're doing pre-sale tickets. Drawing starts at 11 and every hour on the hour. Last hour, you have a chance to win $3,200. $5 a ticket. You can go ahead and check your tickets. Make sure to say thank you to all the volunteers out here giving their best to serve you. And make sure to check out the 100 Car Classic event happening right there in the parking lot of the museum. That's 100 Car Classics right in there. They're going to be having a contest. Live stage starts at around 11 o'clock, 1 o'clock. It's going to be meat cotton. Feels great. Right in here, we've got plenty of food. The beer garden will be opening up. And if you have any questions, ask your volunteer. And again, folks, send out your friends. Invite them over. It's a great day here for the 43rd annual Good Old Days. We appreciate it. Make sure to go ahead and be present about 10 minutes before the drawing. Your chance to win some cash. Any questions, ask a volunteer. And again, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for the Humble Fire Department. Thank you for the Humble Police Department.
You priming it? If you got a minute and you'll tell me some story about it, I'd love to learn a little bit more about it. I've got a podcast, Oil Field Podcast.
Well, I've always felt like the Good Oil Days needed something depicting the oil industry, and that's why we have the Derrick and the blowout and the drawing and the pump jack. And this was donated by a classmate of mine, Sally Burton Johnson. She and her husband, her late husband, and I were working on this, and he unfortunately had a fatal accident. He fell, and it was fatal. And so I didn't want to stop the project, so I continued, and this is what we ended up with, and we're very proud of it.
Well, I've already taken pictures of it. It's beautiful. Was this an actual pump jack on their property?
Not that we're aware of, no. But this was an engine that was used during that era, you know, early era of the oil field and everything.
About what age or what year was this?
I would say this is in the 20s. I do not have all the information on the engine and whatnot, but it's certainly very old.
It is old. It's got an International Harvester motor on it. It's belt driven. I'll have a picture up on the website, you know, just so people can see it.
It hasn't been started since last year, so it may be a little, little reluctant.
Let's give it a try. Thank you very much.
I have the former police chief, Delbert Dawes, is going to come out after a while, and he knows a lot more about this engine than I do.
Okay. That's well, if I'm walking by, I see somebody else, I might ask you.
Very good.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Little ether in the carburetor. Hadn't been started since last year. It's a manual crank. That's good news. At least we know it's got a spark. Come on, baby. See, he rotates it around until it gets compression. I'm just kind of hanging out, just talking to people.
Here's our music.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen.
Again,
43rd
director.
Annual Good Old Days right here in Noble, Texas, on Main Street. Yeah. We want to say thank you to some special sponsors.
I'm Trey.
We're not gonna
record anything here. It's too loud.
Okay.
But I'd love to talk to you somewhere. Maybe you can kind of give us a humble history. And I saw your book. We advertised your book.
Humble.
Humble.
Don't say the word H. Don't say the H.
Humble.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Silent H.
So
whenever you're available, I'm available.
Okay. I'm usually either here or at the museum.
Bring a friend.
That was good. Thank you.
The raffle's still happening, and we got the Classic Car Show around the corner. So, folks, don't miss an opportunity. It is your 43rd annual Good Old Days right here in Humble, Texas.
Humble.
Good morning. You're with the...
Yes, with Tapville. Did you want to know a little bit more about it?
Sure. Can I record it?
Sure, but our expert is right here.
Well,
speak with
let's
him?
Talk to an expert
he's,
then.
He's the man you want to talk to.
So
owner, Mr. John.
Thank you very much. Hello, owner, Mr. John. I'm Trey.
Trey Jonathan Vigas.
Oil Field Talk Podcast. Came out here just meeting and greeting and talking to people.
Sounds good.
She talked me into coming in here and finding out what Tapville Mobile Tap Room is.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, Trey. Yeah, so we are located in Nolanville, Texas, which is in between Killeen and Temple. It's about three and a half hours northwest of here. Tapville Mobile Tap Room is a self-pour mobile tap room. We can take it to private parties, corporate events, festivals, such as today, of course. It works really cool. You establish a pour pass, and this is the key that turns on all the taps, and it's also the mechanism by which everything is tracked. So it becomes your tab. So you pay for your pour pass is free, and you only pay for what you pour. This is going to track your ounces. That's going to track your dollars, and you pour whatever you'd like. Come and go as you please. Hold on to the card. It's yours throughout the duration of the festival.
So when you get the card, do you tie a credit card or a debit card
Correct.
To it?
Absolutely.
So that way they keep track of it.
Yep.
But you can. It's basically a self-serve beer
yep.
tap. And there's nobody. It's. I'm going to take a picture of it here. As a matter of fact, I'll get a picture with you in it.
Yeah. We have mostly local or regional craft products, mostly. We have three different brands. Our bottle is on the tap today.
Give me a Texas smile. There you go. Great.
And
I want to get that logo in there.
Beer, wine, cider.
One more time. I wanted to get the tap room name brand in there.
Perfect.
So yeah, I've got a oil field talk podcast. I record anybody that's ever done anything with the oil field, except changing your oil. But if you've worked in the oil field, I don't care what you did. I love to hear stories.
All right.
And we're losing some of that communication with people not telling stories like they used to. You know, everybody's sitting on their phone and not talking, not communicating.
That's right.
And a lot of those old stories and humorous stories and history are being lost. So that's what kind of inspired me to start recording people. And it's just fun. I don't make a nickel. Maybe one day.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I just enjoy.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Well, I appreciate it.
Brett, is great meeting you.
You too. Good luck. I love it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're just going to wait till we get here.
So you're the great announcer.
I am.
May I interview you?
Sure, absolutely.
All right. So I'm Trey with Oilfield Talk Podcast.
Okay, I'm Adam Smiley.
Adam Smiley. Some people may have heard you a minute ago making the announcements.
That's absolutely.
I finally saw you with the mic and said, that's the man.
Yeah, I have two mics. I'm double fisting.
Oh, wow. Good for you.
So what do you got there? I'm sorry, what was your name?
Trey.
I'm smiling. So what do we got going on here? Oilfield Talk? How
that's
can
it.
Help?
It's just stories.
It's just stories about
stories the oil field.
Well, the oil field starts out here in Humble way back before the 1900s. I mean, there's a lot of history that happened with that, including the artesian well. People don't believe what the artesian well was for, but it was nice to keep the ladies of pleasure clean for the oil workers. You got to have happy workers to get that oil.
There you go.
There were several oil booms. In fact, there's another oil boom that's happening up here in the North Texas. There's still oil fields producing here in Humble. There's still some narcotic happening. A lot of the companies that are still in existence today still have rights out here to the mineral.
That's right.
All that history is out there in the museum and everything like that.
I was speaking with someone a few minutes ago, and we were talking about exactly that. These old fields that were depleted, so they thought, are now going back in. They're able to refract them. They're able to inject them, repressurize them,
There's all kinds of new technology and techniques.
There is. There's
still oil down there.
That's what's
they
happening.
Just didn't get it all out.
That's what's happening right now. In fact, I have three wells that I'm aware of that were dug back in the 1920s, in the old settler days. The family still owned those oil rights, are now coming back up to them. And sure enough, one of them's producing about 80 barrels a day. Right. So there's still money in the ground and there's still opportunities. And it is safe. It is not going to be harming the environment or anything else like that. It's a misconception, a misunderstanding. I mean, they take the salt water and everything like that and pump it back in there.
That's so right. They reinject it.
So there's no loss of pressure, no cavings or anything else like that. And the Railroad Commission, with all the effort they do, they make sure that everyone stays in line. So it's a great opportunity, good business, and it's nice to sit there and see Humboldt kind of take an active role in that
and bring back some more money, bring back some more revenue for everybody. The oil fields. Prosperous, you know, it brings workers in here to do that work. They're spending money, they're buying things, they're in hotels, they got to go eat.
They got to spend money on the groceries, they need clothing, they need housing, they need it's just not just an oil company. There's all sorts of the back end of the industrial and the technology and the fabrication of the parts and the workers and the labor, just not the people that work on the oil, it's not the only ones that make the money.
So I was talking to somebody out in Hobbs, New Mexico back in February, and what they're doing in some of their fields, and just imagine we've got a blob of oil underneath us, right? And it's a mile in each direction. So on one side of the formation, they're injecting and they're washing that formation towards the other side where they're producing the oil out. And they're like putting water and chemicals down there and pushing that across the formation, and it breaks down the oils and it moves it over there and they get that out. It's crazy what they're doing nowadays.
The technology and the industry that's out there itself, there are instruments and tools and everything that unbelievably, there is a safe way and a good economic way and an efficient way that this is done environmentally safe and for the community. And again, bringing all the money in here. I mean, it's just not the clowns that walk around and everything else like that, but it happens. And it's great to see everyone come in and show support for that and actually sit there and educate the ones that aren't familiar with it.
Yes, I really appreciate y'all having this. I came from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I live just south of Baton Rouge.
I was about to say, somewhere along here, there's a mayor walking around here. He's in a white shirt. I mean, he'd love to hear that.
Sure.
Mayor Thunderbuck. I don't see where he's at right now.
Was he the one that was talking earlier?
He was. That was the mayor.
Okay. Yeah. I wish I had caught it from the very beginning. I didn't realize he was going to talk, but when I heard him, I started walking this direction and recorded maybe the second half.
Well, if you want to learn some real history, that's Miss Sharon Matei right there. She's been doing it since the beginning of time.
Well, let's see if Miss Sharon Matei will let me come over here and sit next to her and talk to her.
Oh my goodness.
Is that a yes or oh my goodness no?
Are you sure you want to do that?
Buy her a drink. She'll do anything you want.
I can do both. I've got a oil field talk podcast. It's just recording people telling stories about the oil field. And if you would tell me some stories about this festival or anything related, I'll sit here and listen to you as long as you want to talk. But I'm going to sit down beside you.
You know, I do tours.
Hey, let me get the microphone a little closer. We got so much background noise.
Yeah.
I want to make sure we're getting a good recording.
Thanks.
Don't worry, it doesn't bite.
Are you sure?
Nope, I'm not.
This is one of the best things that...
Please introduce yourself one more time so that I get a good...
My name is Sharon Mittag, and I'm on the Good Old Days Committee.
Here
in Humble, and we promote the good old days. I'm also on the beautification committee, and we promote everything in Humble to beautified.
And it's beautiful down here on Main Street. I drove through here last night or yesterday afternoon, parked my trailer right around the corner. I was like, this is old town.
It is. It's Old Town Humble. And I do tours of Humble, historic tours. And we talk about all the buildings. And there's so much history in Humble that just people don't realize. And with the oil boom and all the well-known names that were here, you know, we have, now my mind's gone blank. But it's the oil boom started here. Spindletop got the name.
Correct. It was the actual first, right. But Humble was actually like the first big play.
Right. My dad, my grandfather worked in the oil field, and my dad used to tell the story that he could walk from Humble to Moonshine Hill and never touch the ground. There were so many oil derricks.
Exactly right. I've heard that. And if you look back at any of those old pictures, they were that close together. And that was one thing that kind of played these fields out a little too fast. They tried to suck them dry really fast.
And and that's what happened. There's still a lot of operating wells today, though.
Well, I was just speaking with Smiley there, and we were talking about that. They're able to bring new technology and new equipment and new techniques and reinvigorate these old fields and make them profitable again.
They're working on some of that. Yes, you'll see that going on in Humble. And Moonshine Hill, there's not as much going on in Moonshine Hill as there used to be, but it's still very historical. And I take people on the tours out there and tell about that. There was only one church house out there, and they had different preachers come on different Sundays.
So they could have different services.
Different services on Sunday. At one time, there were as many as 10,000 people living in Moonshine Hill. But we're very proud of what we have here in Humble. I love Humble. I'm a Houston girl, and I married an Humble boy. And this city girl moved to the country, I thought, but I wouldn't have it any other way.
So Humble is probably, 30 miles from downtown Houston?
I think about 23.
Okay. There was a distance, and it used to be country, but Houston has overgrown.
That's true. And Humble has changed some, but it still maintains that small country town atmosphere.
So I parked my truck one block over. It's still the old houses from the old neighborhood. Absolutely. It's the original neighborhood.
It is. And, it's just, we have a beautiful day today, and we have so much going on. The plant sale, we have.
Tell me a little bit about that, because I took a picture, but I wasn't sure exactly what was going on. So,
well, the plant sale is was originally, we had a garden, and the seniors at the senior activity center planted, and now our public works department handles it, and that's one of the main attractions for the good old days, is everybody comes for the plant sales. Did you see the line?
I took a picture. That's why I took a picture of the line. I went to the other end and took a picture back, but I wasn't sure. So is it a fundraising for Good Oil Days?
It goes into different things for the city.
Okay.
And keeps the seniors going. Of course, the city takes care of a lot of that. We have a new senior center that'll be open. I think they said maybe July. I think it's
this year.
I think so.
Oh,
I think that's what I heard. And it's just, things are changing and things are growing all the time. And our beautiful mural, I am so proud of that. I think the mayor did a fantastic job on getting that done. And maybe we'll see some more around town.
I think so. We're going to let Smiley talk for just a second. And then if you've got some more stories, I'll sit here with you.
And the classic car show right up there at the Humble Museum. Make sure to show up at each vendor and let them see what you have. They have great opportunities, great products, great food, great drinks, and great personalities to go with it. Again, thank you for the Humble Civic Center. Against Waste Management, Takis, and all our special sponsors are here in the 43rd annual Good Old Days.
So I've already set up to interview the man that I think maybe runs the museum. He wrote the book.
Robert Moe.
So I just talked to him a few minutes ago. I talked to his daughter first because he was somewhere else. And I'm going to sit down with him in a quiet place and let him tell some Humble history.
He has written an Humble book. I will have to tell you that the first Humble book was written by my mother-in-law. There was a group. She was the editor, and it was done in the 70s, and it's a beautiful history of Humble. And then
the name of it? Is it still out there?
No, it's not. It's out of print.
Not in publication anymore, but people might be able to find it. What's the name of it?
It's The History of Humble.
Okay.
And it's a beautiful blue hardback book. And but we were fortunate that Robert came along and picked up and is doing some more on the history of Humble.
Fantastic. I'm going to looking forward to hearing that history. I've listened to, I like audiobooks because I travel a lot with this, The Big Rich. So there's a book Brian Burrow wrote called The Big Rich. And this is the original Texas billionaires, the first three big families, their history and how they got in. It's a phenomenal book. I like to listen while I'm driving down the road. Obviously, you could read it if you were interested on paper, but it breaks down not just Spindletop, but all of the great finds, including Humble, including the one north of here around Tyler, and then all of the stuff out west. And it shows, at least the book showed me, how Texas held on to their money.
That's, they did.
So we were talking Rockefeller, for instance. He was the number one oil king of the day. And he had all the Pennsylvania wells and all the stuff on the East Coast. And when Spindletop hit, he tried to come over to Texas, but the Texas legislature saw what he was doing, knew what he was doing, and they blocked him. And they said, we're going to keep this money here. And they just did exactly that. They created the Texas oil boom.
Well, you know, that's, you talk about people in oil, Howard Hughes. There's the story of he had a room in the rooming house here on Main Street in Humble at one time when he, you know, it's all of the, so many of the rich oil families started right here. And we have the streets in Humble that are named after them. So it's really, the mayor loves to talk about Humble.
I'm going to find him also.
Oh, you need to, because when I do these tours, the first place we go is City Hall, and the mayor greets everybody. They're bus tours. And so I give him so much time to talk, but he always goes over because he just loves to tell stories about Humble.
Tell the stories, and that's what I'm here for. You know, I don't want to talk about the traumas and the dramas I want the people. I want the stories of, you know, people living around the oil field, and I don't care what they did in the oil field, if they're related to somebody that was in the oil field, if they married somebody in the oil field, I'll interview them. I just like hearing the stories.
Well, like I told you, this city gal married an Humble boy. I'll have to tell you, this is just a funny story. During COVID, you know, you couldn't go anywhere, you couldn't see anybody, so we were trying to think of something to do, and my husband said, well, let's go drag Maine. And I thought, okay, what is dragging Maine? He said, well, that's what we used to do when I was in school. And so we came
down. Slow roll, slow drive.
And we drug Maine, and I just had to laugh because that's dragging Maine was not what I had in mind that I was going to do. But anyway.
So when I was growing up, we had Jackson Street. That was the place that we went on Friday night, Saturday night. You drove your muscle car slowly and just listen to the music.
Your chance to win $100 can be yours. Drawing is at 11 a.m. That gives you 25 more minutes. $5 a ticket. $5 a ticket to get your chance. Drawing each hour, the prize gets bigger and bigger until 4 p.m. at $3,200. But the first drawing is 25 minutes.
You know, I don't know if Billy Sheffield will be here today or not. I'm sure he will. But if you want history on Humble, that's who you need to talk to.
Anybody. If you see them, you can tell them it's the guy in the red shirt carrying a microphone. If they can spot me, I'll swing back by here and talk to you. Oh, yeah, here he is, or there he is. And we'll definitely, you know, connect.
You could almost call him Mr. Humble. He has, he lives out on Moonshine Hill, and he has several buildings full of the
original.
History. Yes.
Oh, wow.
In fact, the other day, I saw a letter that, he would have been my father-in-law, but in World War II, he wrote a letter to Billy Sheffield's mother, and it's really, and it was written the year I was born.
Oh, wow.
In 1943. So, you know, he's got tons of history that he could tell you about, and he would be a good one to get.
I love history. I try to get the old stories, and that's what history is. It's the old stories, and people like to learn. People like to listen to that kind of thing.
They do, and you know, we take for granted a lot of time that our kid. I take for granted that my kids know things, and they don't. And so you have to remember to tell them about it and that.
Come on, you've heard me put that stuff on everything.
We have a great crowd today.
Pepper sauce, the vendor right here down towards Avenue D on Main Street. We thank you for your support. We thank you for joining us. Make sure to show your support by going ahead and checking it out. The Caribbean Fire Pepper Sauce.
Margie told us right there is an old humble girl. She could tell you a bunch. I was telling him you were an old humble girl and you could tell lots of stories.
I'm old. Well,
not old in that sense, Margie. We're not there.
I just lived here all my life.
That's right.
So I've got an oil field talk podcast. And I just like collecting the history and the stories and the crazy things that happened that you just wouldn't believe.
That building across the street, our parents had a shoe store back in the 60s.
There you go.
Long time ago.
Fire right there on the corner.
I like your shirt.
I sell these.
Howard needs one of those. That's what is.
Go get him one.
Tell him the story of
this is written on the back of the Charles R. Bender Performing Arts. Used to be our high school. In fact, my class was the last one to graduate there. And it says on the back of the building, impossible is un-American. So I decided to broadcast it.
That's right. You know, there's no such thing as impossible. We'll find a way. I'm trying to remember what the exact quote was, but I interviewed a good gentleman. He's 85 years old. He started when he was 14 in the oil patch.
Oh, my.
And the stories he was telling were just absolutely phenomenal.
Must have been Billy.
It was Mr. Crutcher is his name.
Okay.
His name's Mr. Crutcher.
The one you want to talk to is Billy Sheffield.
Right. I'm gonna find him, hopefully.
Yeah, but he'll be around.
One of the stories he told was about a caterpillar dozer, right? Big, heavy dozer that got buried in the mud, and they couldn't get it out. And he walked up there and he got everybody together. He says, "The impossible." And I wish I could remember the exact quote, but I've got it on the podcast if you ever want to listen to it. But he said, "The impossible is you can always spend enough money to make the impossible happen." He was like, "I'll give you a 25% bonus if you get that cat out of that mud." And everybody went, you know, they went into a second gear. And he said, boom, it's not impossible.
If you inspire, you can do anything.
You'll find a way. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I mean, you won't.
Once you win,
that's all it takes.
I'm going to let you breathe. I'll come back later and go see your other people. Let them know I'm out and about.
I will.
I've got a big logo on the back of my shirt. All right.
And a quick and fast moving line. Show your support. 43rd annual. Good old man, right here. Thank you to the city of Rumble, thank you to the city workers, thank you for the volunteers, and thank you for the first responders.
My cousin's house that was falling apart, and they had to tear it down. And when they tore it down, my son and I went over there, and they had all the beams that were underneath the house. You could tell for soil also. They were built from the bats of oil.
The timbers of the old wooden derricks.
Yeah,
the mats of the derricks, yep.
So I thought that was interesting. My son recognized it, but I didn't.
Yeah, you can find all kinds of things under, you know, old buildings like that. You never know what you're going to discover.
Right. Well, I think they built that house in maybe 1920s. Because my aunt and uncle had gotten married in 1916.
That's a long time ago.
Yes, it was. My mother was born here in 1906.
Wow. All right, my name's Trey. I've got an Oil Field Talk podcast. Yes. I'm from just south of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Drove over here yesterday. I'm sorry?
Where are you from?
Just south of Baton Rouge.
What town?
Gonzales.
Okay.
Wanted to come over here for your little festival. I'm just get stories from the oil field. Typically, I talk to people that work in the oil field.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if it's land-based, shore-based, I mean, offshore, whatever. Anybody that touches oil, I'll talk to them.
Okay.
You've written a book. I don't know what your history is. Please give me your name and tell me a little bit of history.
Okay. My name is Robert Moe. I'm the executive director of the Humble Museum here in Humble, Texas. The town of Humble is kind of unique in this part of East Texas. So a lot of these East Texas towns, as you go up Highway 59 on to Louisiana, they basically started off as stops on the railroad, as this railroad track was built from here on through East Texas in the 1870s. Most of them became lumber towns because whenever the trains came in, it gave way for these people to start shipping their lumber to town. The few of those towns are left. You get to Diboll, you get a few others. Most of these towns have disappeared. There's some left. So Humble actually starts off as a farming community in the 1800s. In the 1870s, it becomes a lumber town. Charles Benders opens up a lumber mill here, and he basically is the one who actually set the plat for the city streets we're walking on right now back in 1904. But in the early 1900s, people came here looking for oil. After the big spindle top boom in 1900, people come along the Texas coast looking for salt domes, and there's one in Humble. It's where Moonshine Hill is located at. All right, so in 1902, some of the guys who were drilling for oil in Spindle Top, that's where all the modern oil companies originated,
right?
They come here in Humble. They're drilling for oil. It takes a couple years. They strike oil in November of 1904, and Humble becomes an oil boom town. And what's interesting is that because of its history, it has this dual existence as a lumber town and as an oil town. It actually survives where a bunch of these other towns basically just, you know, folded up and left. The oil booms were short-lived. I think the first one only lasted about a year. Humble had three booms, and each came about as they developed deeper drilling techniques.
New technology, yep.
And it survived as a lumber town probably until the 1920s. What's interesting about Humble is after the oil kind of dries up, after the lumber kind of goes apart, Humble actually almost folds in the 1950s. It doesn't have that many people living here. The school district is actually looking at merging with one of the neighboring communities. And then the city of Houston does something interesting. In the 1950s, the city of Houston annexed huge amounts of land. And where Humble used to be in the sticks,
right,
by the end of the 50s, Humble's just a suburb of Houston. They also, in the 1950s, they create Lake Houston, which is behind us, which used to just be part of a river. And Lake Houston became a big water source for the city of Houston. So Humble is, in the 50s, it becomes a suburb of Houston. It has this great free lake that people can now go fishing and boating and all
land
sorts of
land prices things just went up for lakefront property.
And they start building some, the airport begins construction in the 60s.
Right, which is right here.
Yeah, it's right here. And then they start building some of these master plan communities. So by the time you get to the 60s and 70s, Humble's kind of a desirable place to live.
Yep, and it's got that old town feel on Main Street. And I was talking earlier about I'm parked one street back, and it's still the old neighborhoods, the old houses.
And those houses have been here since the oil boom.
Wow. So that's the 20s, right?
The 1800s.
Wow.
Yeah. Those houses are very old. We have pictures in some of our books of those houses, and some of them have derricks in their backyard because people were thinking, okay, if I can have a derrick built in my backyard, I can share on the profits. But to be honest, very few of the people here made money on the oil boom. It's the businessmen who came in.
Right.
Like most of the city of Houston, in fact, all the names I went to University of Houston, all the names I associate with Houston, like University of Houston, like Melcher Hall, all these people made their money in the Humble oil fields, and it built modern Houston.
It did.
But for the people here, they didn't make much money on the oil boom, but they did, you know, enjoy the revenue from the taxes. So they had brick buildings when people still had wooden buildings. They had nice streets, sanitation, water. So it did help Humble grow. Oh, yeah, I have that book.
Yeah, great book. You know, I've been telling a couple of different people about it. I listen to the audiobook because I drive for this podcast so much, and I've listened to this same book three different times.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's so massive as far as the amount of information that's in there, the Big Rich and how those guys did what they did, you know. Like the guy that finally found oil at Humble, he was the guy that was like just keep drilling deeper. Just keep drilling deeper. Keep drilling deeper. They thought that it was at X number of feet. And they would drill down and nothing's there. And everybody told him, we've tried up there. There's nothing up there. That's, you're wasting your time. He's like, no, I feel like it's there. And he just drilled and drilled and drilled until finally he found it. And again, there's
Moonshine Hill.
Moonshine Hill was found.
Patillo Higgins, who is the guy who's responsible for Spindletop. Mm-hmm. In fact, Higgins Street, two streets over, is named after him because he came here. He's one of those early guys came here to drill. When Charles Bender laid out the plot of this downtown area, and he did that like about September 1904, he named these streets going east and west after four of the major oil drillers who were here, including Patillo Higgins. The main street here used to be called Barrett Street. That's the guy who was the superintendent of the Humble Oil Fields. And then we have Granberry and Steadeye behind us. But actually, the first people who actually struck oil is the Moonshine Oil Company, which Howard Hughes' father was one of the guys on that crew. Most of the early oil strikes were where we call Moonshine Hill now, but it was called Eccles Ridge back then. Mm-hmm. But by the time we get to 1907, it's been renamed as Moonshine Hill in honor of the Moonshine Oil Company that was the first ones to strike oil.
Wow. That's the kind of stuff I love to learn. I love to hear. I think my listeners will enjoy that history because we work in the oil field, but we don't see those profits, just like your city doesn't. We drill the hole, you know, we don't make the money, but the history around it and what it facilitates, you know, what else it pays for. You know, the drilling out there at Moonshine Hill, they had to buy their groceries from somebody. They had to sleep somewhere. They had to, you know, all that support from around the oil patch, it multiplies out to the communities.
Well, in fact, when they first started drilling for oil, there just simply wasn't enough places for people to be. They didn't have, we'd had lumber, of course, but there weren't enough homes built. So for those early years, all the guys who were working out at the oil fields are basically living, they're either sleeping out in the open ground or they're living in tents.
Tents, yep.
Grocery stores started popping up, but the interesting is it's about Ross Sterling. So when Ross Sterling first comes here, you know, he had stores in the other four oil boom towns of the time, other three oil boom towns of the time, and he opened one up here. A lot of the guys, the drillers who were here, they trusted him from the other places, so they would only buy from him.
Right.
So he was making some pretty good profits just because he knew all these people, had built such a great reputation, they're only buying from his grocery store.
That's crazy, but it makes sense.
Yeah.
It just makes sense. That's the way the oil field is. It's who you know,
absolutely
networking, as we call it today. Back then, hell, I don't know what they called it back then, but it's knowing somebody, trusting somebody. Those are some crazy days. That was incredibly dangerous. I do safety in the oil field. You know, those days, that didn't exist. It was just get her done attitude. So tell me a little bit about your book. You've written a book or several books. I just read the table and saw that there were multiple books. So I want to let my listeners, you promote your books. Maybe they can order online. Tell them how to get it.
Well, there's a book series you can probably find in any bookstore across the United States called Images of America. And they do these picture book stories of these towns across the United States. I did the book for Humble. And basically, it's got great pictures of when Humble's first developed. It's got a lot of good pictures of the oil field, the schools, and just stuff around the city for the time. You have to do pictures. So like it has about 230 pictures in it. And you're allowed to do text on the pictures. It's funny because the history of Humble, people in Humble tend to know their history more than any other little town I've known, but there were some inconsistencies in that history. So we used the text under the pictures to correct people's understanding of the knowledge of the history. So we put a lot of stuff in there that up to that time people didn't really know.
They thought the story was one way, but it was actually the facts were different.
Yeah, so we used it to correct that. We've done some other, I've done some other books in the area. There's one on the old Humble Cemetery here. We just started putting out a new book series called the Humble History Series, where we focus on specific things. Like volume one is looking at short biographies on 16 people back from old Humble's golden times, like a short history of Pleasant Humble, who the town is named after, or Nick Lambrick, who's one of the mayors of the town. Over at the museum, we're right next to this old high school that was built in 1930. We have a whole book devoted to that.
I was speaking to two ladies earlier, and she said she was the last class. She was part of the last class of that school.
And my parents graduated from that school.
Right.
For most of the people who were born in the 40s and 50s, that school is very special to them. It's an older school. It can't be used as a modern school. And the school district didn't really know what to do with it. So basically, at one point, they gave it to the city of Humble. And at the time, most of the councilmen had actually attended that school.
Yeah, they didn't want to get rid of it.
So they held on to it for a couple of years, and then they spent some good money and turned it into a performing arts center. It's just gorgeous inside.
Nice.
They restored the outside back to its original configuration. They redid the inside for performing arts, and it's a great place for music.
Oh, wow.
So Humble's really interested in preserving their history, too, right, which is nice. We actually, the museum, we get the most of the funding from the museum comes from the city of Humble.
Oh, good.
And that's another rare thing you won't
see. Usually you have to dig and squeeze and beg plead for support or sponsors. And something like that keeps the history alive. And so does a festival like this.
This is one of the greatest street festivals.
It's wonderful. It's probably, let me think, one, two, probably 8 blocks long.
Oh, at least. And then it goes all the way over.
And I was actually headed towards the museum when I ran into you and wanted to, you know, I know I wanted to sit down with you, just wanted to find a good time. I really appreciate your time.
Sure.
And what's the name of your book and how can people get it?
Most the books are Images of America. This one is for Humble. I did another one for Alding. You can get those pretty much anywhere.
So those little books are all part of a series.
There's two of them that are part of a series across the United States.
Okay,
and
now I get it.
You can get them from any bookstore. You can get them from Amazon. There's about 5 other books I've written for the museum that you can only get from the museum.
Okay. They have a website?
They do. They do have a website, humblemuseum.com.
Right. There you go.
But yeah, the museum's job really is to preserve this history. Not only preserve it, but to tell the history, which is why we do the books. So we get that stuff. If people who don't even come to the museum at least get the history.
That is what brought this podcast about, because we're losing the history of the oil patch and people are not sitting down and having a conversation like they used to. They're not reading books like they used to.
That's true.
They Google it. If it's not on Google or Wikipedia, they just don't even look anymore.
Or if there's a short video about it on YouTube.
Exactly. So my thought was, I have got to start capturing these old stories, this old history, before these people pass and we've lost it forever. And yeah, okay, you wrote a great book. I haven't read it, but I mean, I'm just saying, you wrote a great book, but not everybody's gonna read it.
Right.
I mean, unfortunately, that's just today's fact. Put them in audiobooks. I know yours is full of pictures, but I mean, you see what I'm getting at.
That becomes when the YouTube videos comes up. That's
right,
the pictures.
Exactly. So, you know, we have to convert the way that we learned, you and I, to a modern style and what the future is holding. And podcasts are popular and people can listen and learn something. Next year, maybe you'll get another 100 people come to the festival after listening.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that. I want to promote you as much as anybody.
That's great.
Because I'm part of the oil patch. I've been in it for 26 years. Now I just want to listen to the stories. I love history. Hopefully the listeners will come and the podcast will do well.
That'd be great.
All right. Thanks again. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Nomad Mobile Productions is a broadcasting and media production company that produces podcasts and provides a mobile podcast studio complete with audio and video recording equipment. We also offer post-production processing, editing, marketing, and publication for podcasts. Our mobile production studio will come to you. Visit our webpage, nomadmobileproductions.com, or our Facebook,